get some of these other guys to stop the big spending. Let's get on this new kick, inflation proof, and the real man, what we're trying to do is save more money. And it didn't do that. And the thing, you bring up the point as to, in the future, how far will we go, and what will be the decision of the legislators? I see it maybe 3 years down the road, maybe four if you're lucky, the big decision between continued inflation proofing and allowing dividends and or for general fund usage. I took it from your presentation, Dave, that you felt that we should always favor inflation proofing, and I would disagree with you. At that time, we're going to get ourselves into a problem where we're going to tax the people just to inflation proof, just to save more. We're almost at that problem now. Should we go with the original intent of the permanent fund and use that for government services, government needs, or should we continue saving ourselves to death with the promise we're going to give you more dividends down the road?
Madam Chairman, if I could respond. I think that, and I'm not sure that I really speak for the trustees, but I speak for Dave Rose as a sort of a casual observer of the permanent fund. And I really think that the legislature in 1982 put together a very good management act for the fund. And the reason I say that is because all the competing forces for permanent fund money go away from the table just a little bit unhappy. It's sort of like a good labor negotiation. If both parties leave the table a little bit unhappy, you've probably struck a pretty good deal. So let's take a look at that the present act that we have. It has dividends, but the dividend advocates didn't quite get exactly what they wanted because dividends haven't been built into the Constitution. They can be changed by legislative action, and money doesn't have to be appropriated every year in the full amount for dividends. The inflation-proofing folks, the trust people who parochially, like myself, guard a trust, we want inflation-proofing because we want to contain the trust whole in terms of purchasing power. But we didn't quite get what we wanted because inflation-proofing is secondary to dividends. So we're not quite exactly where we want to be. The legislature has the ability to use the earnings of the fund, but because they're put into the fund, it takes special scrutiny, and you have to sort of make a case and build public consensus in order to take that money. Even though you can take it every time and any time you want it, you have to make a sort of a special case to the people. So the dividend people didn't get everything they wanted. The inflation-proofing people didn't get everything they wanted. The legislature doesn't have a complete, easy way to go to take the money. And as time goes on, each of those three forces are going to compete based on the legitimate needs of all Alaskans. And there are going to be times when it makes sense to inflation-proof, sense to pay dividends, and sense to spend it. And that's where that public consensus has to be melded for either one of the three. And that pendulum is going to float between those three uses of the fund. And if it gets too far to an excess, the people of the state will pull it back into balance. And I don't think that we really have anything to fear with the way the present legislation is built. I think it's very finely tuned and very, very clever, because it leaves the opportunity for flexibility across the board for all three competing needs, with the absolute insurance that if there is too much of an excess, the people of this state are going to pull that pendulum back through public opinion to get you to pay more dividends or do more inflation proofing or spend the money on state expenditure. So the Dave Rose view of where we are with the current Management Act is that it's a pretty good piece of legislation, and it occurred through a great deal of debate and a great deal of compromise. And you can see that compromise when you really look at it. And you'll always be faced, as legislators, with someone who wants a little bit of upmanship. I want inflation frozen. The other guy wants dividends. The third guy wants to be able to spend it with full legislative prerogative. And you'll always be faced with those three different competing needs. But if you have empathy for all of them, you'll come back, I think, repeatedly to the fact that this legislation may not be A1 perfect, but it's a pretty darn good balancing act, and it doesn't put anybody in the driver's seat.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Chairperson. First, a comment to my esteemed colleague, the senior legislator on the committee. I'd like to thank him publicly for his foresight during those wise times.
You're having trouble hearing, so you're not going to speak.
I would like to thank the senior member of the committee, the senior legislator of the committee, for those wise times of putting that money into the fund. I think it was wise justified. To Mr. Rose, I would like to thank you also for your presentation. My question concerns the matter of the debate as regards investment in foreign stock exchanges, or stock funds. I understand that we could, in fact, spread the risk even more in that 6.5% that you are allowed to play with there with stock investments. And I just wonder if you could comment on how you feel if this time we had that opportunity.
Madam Chair, I guess I am a little bit disappointed that the legislation that was pending did not pass. As you know, the authority to be able to invest in international securities resides in the second committee of referral in both bodies, in respective House and Senate Finance Committees. If that legislation had passed, there is no doubt that your fund probably today would have been in a better position vis-a-vis risk. That legislation involves not only the ability to invest in the stock market, international equities, but also in securities that are denominated in foreign currency, i.e. yen and marks. It is obvious and has been obvious to us that if the legislation had passed this last year, we would not have been engaged in international equities. The cycle has fallen to the point where we wouldn't be in international equities in a prudent mode at all. But we would be in the process of gearing up for when we would get back into them in 2 or 3 years, perhaps. The international equity arena has been as hard hit as the domestic area. And in fact, it would take us probably a year, at least, just to gear up to get our act together in being able to enter that market. However, with respect to the fixed income area, the bond area, there is no question that if we could have invested in mark-denominated bonds or British gilts or in yen-denominated securities, that as the dollar falls and as we continue to see the dollar fall, we could have been in a position where we had saved ourselves a considerable amount of money. The dollar right now is about 135 to the yen, down from over twice that. The chances are, in our best estimation, is that the dollar will continue to fall more. It has to fall more, probably to the 110, 120 level. If we had had the opportunity to have been in mark or yen-denominated securities, we could have avoided the 10 and 20% drop that we've seen. I would hope that the legislation will pass next year. The fund, as you've seen, is a very, very conservative entity. And we're not about, as its managers, to run out, nor the trustees, willy-nilly to get involved in a hot foreign market. But we do need the tool in our tool chest. And we have felt the lack of having that tool has hurt us a little bit in these last few months.
Thank you.
Representative Bernard.
Now you hit one of my funny bones, Dave. And it comes down to the point of the fact that we have been doing well with the fund. And I do want to set it up to my other fellow legislators by the fact that we talk about Alaska hire, local investments, and all that other business. And yet we not forget that we are part of the United States. We are part of the 50 states. And I'm not denying the fact that from the pure capitalistic standpoint that we could do better, probably. But the fact that we do get a tremendous amount of federal dollars into the state, and I don't think we can have it both ways. We either have to talk about supporting the U.S., buying American, and doing this, and then, so I have the philosophical difference in that, and I will debate that strongly when that issue comes up. So that's my position. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just respond briefly, Representative Menard. Many of the multinational companies that we look at as U.S. companies, in which we invest in heavily, are indeed really multinational. the IBMs, the Exxons, this Ohio's, you know, these type of folks. And there's no question about the fact that in our daily activities as Alaskans, we have contracts and do a considerable amount of business with the British Petroleums of the world and the Exxons, and BP, of course, being a foreign, which we can't invest in. It is a small, shrinking world. And there is no question about the fact that we do look at it in terms of an economic bottom line as opposed to a social bottom line. And I think that's a fair region for debate. But within the context of pure economics, not social and political, I think you folks tasked me and the trustees as well to produce that hard bottom line. So I respect your view. It's just that I think we come at it from two different viewpoints.
Representative Boyer, if you are still with us in Fairbanks, do you have any questions or comments?
I am still with you, and I just found the presentation very interesting. I don't have any questions at this time.
Thank you. Any other committee questions? Representative Martin.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been thinking on this socio-economic responsibility, separating the two, and I don't have any problems right now in clearly separating the two, and that it is to the benefit of the state to make this a clear economic package without any political. As far as the money that we make on, we're socialistic enough, you know, and we do give enough money out to businesses, to individuals, to home mortgages, to everything and anything. So I would worry if we went any further and invest. You see, as Mr. Rose pointed out, all the money that is available, the banks don't even want. They can't use it. You know, so why force it down someone's throat? Well, right now, people aren't paying their dues. They aren't paying what they did borrow and forfeit on everything and anything. This is one thing, and this is my real conservative, right-wing, narrow-minded, archaic view. Let him operate it as a pure, selfish businessman, and we're all going to live better. And then we can get socialistic as we want on everything else.
Dave, I wonder if you could just shed a little more light on the percentage of defaults that the mortgage loans are experiencing. You mentioned it was low. That's reassuring, but I'm just concerned because I know what kind of default rate the state loan programs have been experiencing of late, and I'm just curious what it looks like.
Well, Madam Chairman, we monitor our real estate on a regular basis because obviously we live in the same climate, which is Alaska, and we know that there's a lot of problems. About 4% of our loans are 60 days delinquent or more. And about 7% of our loans in total are over 90 days delinquent. So that when you look at 4% over 60 days and 7% over 90 days, these are not the kind of figures you see, for example, with Alaska Housing Finance. But our program is very small. We have 23 properties that it's all we have in our inventory. And unlike HFC, which with trailers probably has 3,000, we only have 23 properties. And that's because we don't want to foreclose on people. It doesn't do us any good. And if these people are generally folks who have had some hard times on a short-term basis, we would rather cut their payments, extend their payment on to the end of their term, do anything we can other than have them move out of their homes. Because then we just have to pay light and heat in a tough Alaska winter, and that's nothing but a dead loss. So our program is a little bit different than HFC because we do rent our homes, we try to get leases, we do everything we can to get some kind of occupancy. So the amounts are very, very small. Again, when you have 20% down, it's not like 5% down on some other programs where you can just throw the keys over at the bank teller and say, I'm leaving. 20% down is a hefty amount of money, and people think twice or three times before they walk away from it. But we do monitor it monthly, and the trustees by resolution compel me twice a year to address the question of whether we need a loan loss reserve, which is an accounting type reserve against losses. But by formal resolution, they require me to go through a whole regimen, twice a year of analysis, which I present to them, so that we're on top of the situation rather than behind the curve.
Thank you. Are there any individuals here who are listening to this today that either have a question for Mr. Rose or a brief comment? Any members of the public? Okay, any other committee questions? I just have one final question, Dave. Taking a brief look at your report, under the total earnings reserve year to date, September 30, 1987, at $718,146,000. Mm-hmm. As you pointed out earlier, that's a little misleading. That's not really the money which is available for expenditure. It's money, a large portion of which is either going to be in an inflation proofing or permanent fund dividend. Can you tell at this point in the year, or is your calculation of the amount needed for inflation proofing done later? I guess I'm wondering how much of that $718 million is already the spoken for, so to speak, by those two programs.
Okay, the long-term projection shows that we're going to earn about $733 million. And of that, we're going to use $421 million for dividends, and we're going to need $348 million for inflation proofing. Well, if you add $421 and 348, you're going to find that $733 million won't cover it. You're going to be about $36 million shy. So again, that's earnings of 733, dividends payout is 421, inflation proofing is 348, and if I'm correct, that means that we're going to be about $36 million short, and that would have to come out of that earnings reserve account.
Representative Martin.
Madam Chairman, I do have one more question. I don't know if Mr. Rhodes or others can help, but I'm going to express it, and I think maybe they can help. Number one, when you decide how many people are in the state to get dividend checks, whose statistic do you go by? Do you go by the Department of Labor, Department of Community and Regional Affairs to get your final population count?
Actually, neither of those. We use the Department of Revenue's source book.
Department of Revenue. Oh, the third one. And as you probably know, those two don't agree with each other.
No, first all place, three don't agree with each other.
Neither of them. I've been trying to get population statistics. Now, the reason being is that I thought this year here we would have a significant decrease in the number of recipients, and I've called up the department, and I thought it would only be fair, and I think your department ought to look into it for us too, plus the job that you have in giving a fair amount of dividends to everyone. It seems to me we should be able to evaluate how many checks, say, last year were actually cashed out of state. It seems to me, and I told the guy, I'd be glad to go down there 3 days on my own, let me have a check, so I just look at the backup and take a count. Well, they told me, well, it's going to cost money. Well, I'll go down on my own. You don't have to pay me anything. Have someone watch me. We should get an idea of how many were cashed out of check last year, don't you think?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think there was a study, I think it was roughly 19,000 checks went out of state last year. The problem is how the numbers run out after that. A lot of those are students, Alaskan students who are going to school outside.
Maybe.
And I think the demographics break down a little bit below that. We know about 19,000 went out of state.
Okay. They told me that.
Do you by any chance know where that number comes from? I've read that same number, and I've also read the other number, which says that of that number, approximately 8,000 are perceived of as Alaskans who intend to return, like students, and 11,000 are people who have decided to leave the state. And I have been searching to try and find where that source.
I think the 19,000 comes from a computer sort by zip code, which Department of Revenue has. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it comes from.
Okay. Now, on that day, last year they said there's 539,000 people applied for dividends. Of that amount, 530,000 checks were sent out. Wonderful. This year here, I've been absolutely shocked. I thought we were going to have a decrease in the number of people applicants, but they said, well, 555,000 applied for dividend checks, and we're going to send out 535,000. How would they know in Anchorage alone we lost at a minimum of 20,000 people? And I'm wondering who's watching the shop, who's watching the doors. You know, to me, it should have been no more than maybe 510,000 checks going out.
when you see all about foreclosures. And I was wondering if your department has some way, because it's always on your back, or we can put it on your back if you don't mind anyway, to monitor them who are giving you these numbers. I don't think it's being monitored. A lot of citizens are complaining that they know too many people that left town and checks are being forwarded or something like that. I feel in the first place our numbers are wrong. How can we get $535,000 checks out? And we all know that the population has gone down by 20,000-30,000.
Madam Chair, Representative Martin, Terry, I don't know. As you know, we earn the money and we send the state one check, and Department of Revenue does all the breakdown and distribution. We just cut a check for $390 million and give it to the state. So we don't really get into that mechanism. We used the figure of $527,000 this year in our projections because we thought that was a reasonable number, and we're really quite surprised to see the 535, whatever that figure was. We get an awful lot of feedback because a lot of people call our office thinking we deal with the dividends when indeed we don't. A surprisingly amount of large amount of chatter, which seems to indicate that people are really waiting around to collect a check and then quit the country. I find that really, really painful.
We're going to see that.
But I hear it so many times that I begin to suspect that there may be some truth in it.
Madam Chair, I actually believe that this year here, because in my neighborhood, and I'm in a low economic neighborhood, you used to live in my neighborhood, Dave, I have two friends that are bus drivers, and they're telling me that Susan left, Johnny left, and they said goodbye to the bus driver because he's a nice guy. Why are you leaving? No, we got our checks, and Daddy said we have to leave. A lot of them are waiting until the end of the semester during the Christmas holiday when they're going to visit the grandparents anyway or go down south. But basically, they want to have the kid have the full semester in school and leave, which just tells me that the economy is going to be worse unless we do something about it. But my major point is that if you're saying it's $527,000 and you divide it according to that, are we then going to be short if they send $535,000 checks out?
Oh, well, Madam Chair, our projection will be off base, but actually whatever the dividend, whatever the applications indicate and whatever they prove up is what it is. So they're working on the 535. It's just that our projection. See, we projected about $718, and that's the difference.
Okay. But you have nothing been told on time and monitor it? I really think, Madam Chair, we have a problem there for what numbers we're using and under what conditions.
Dave, thank you very much for spending these hours with us, bringing us up to date, for your excellent presentation. We appreciate it. As I said, I do hope that you can put it in a form that the rest of the legislature might be able to take a look at, because I think it would really help very much reassure some people who are concerned about what Black Monday did to the fund, and also give them a clearer picture of how important inflation proofing is to the future of the permanent fund. Ladies and gentlemen who joined us this afternoon, thank you very much for joining us. The teleconference and the hearing will now conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And allow him the opportunity to say something to the committee. Mark, I don't know if you're still in Fairbanks or if we're still on network, but there is a gentleman here who's going to make a brief statement to the committee. Go ahead, please.
Oh, she might put that switch off.
Just in case he is on.
Thanks.
Thank you for reopening it for this statement. I didn't have anything to ask Mr. Rose on the program. That's the reason I didn't come forward. But I would like to put into the ballpark a couple options for the legislature's tours to consider, at least in their upcoming session. I submit the following. The first option, and there are going to be a lot of cries around the state, if you did this, number one, eliminate all dividends. And then use the money for A. There would be no more problem with the state to fund school construction and pay a large percentage towards school operation in incorporated areas and cities, just as they are currently paying 100% of the cost of construction and operation in unincorporated areas. B, then the state could continue the longevity pension for seniors over 65 and Medicare for all ages of Alaska citizens, and Pioneer Homes could be expanded. Or the option number two, work on the idea to eliminate aliens from any dividends. As it is now, it don't ask no questions about are you a citizen of the United States or anything to be eligible to draw a dividend. What have they ever done to help Alaska? Number two, reduce absenteeism from the state residents for no more than 30 or 40 days in any year calendar to be eligible for the next year's dividends. Number three, I'm going to hear a lot of holler on this one, eliminate children under the age of five. Use their dividends for aid to children and dependency and such. Number four, all children of five through their entire schooling years to contribute one half of their dividends to the school district in which they attend school and all through their college years. Now, they're going to ask me why I say this. They're asking for all of the dividends from the senior citizens. I say that children should give half of their dividends for their schooling. Number five, anyone above listed not going to school and up to the age of 65 to contribute one half of their dividends to the state general fund for their Medicaid account to be established for all. Number six, anyone 65 or over to contribute one half of their dividends to help cover the longevity pension program and Medicaid to be established and Pioneer Home Program and or rent subsidy program such as OSHA, Alaska State Housing Authority, for those needing and able to live alone without daily medical care. Number seven, establish a Medicaid program for all residents of the state on a matching or deductible amount such as the Federal Veterans Hospital Medical Program is now, according to the income amount for the amount the person pays. And now, out of the permanent fund, there is some subsidized mortgages, but the state does have a lot of subsidized mortgages, we all know. Anyone having a subsidized mortgage loan, deduct the amount of the subsidy each year from their dividend first before they're eligible to draw any dividends. Number two, establish a sunset law on all subsidized loans and consolidate all state-funded loans to one department, thereby eliminating millions of dollars in duplicating services. On mortgages, charge a surcharge of 1 or 2 points of interest on the interest charged on loans and still be under the market price of conventional loans charged by other banks and loan companies. This profit would put all state loans back in the black and profitable. That just about covers my statement. The state should take some of this subsidized loan money and, number one, eliminate all dividends for anybody that's drawn subsidized loans, subsidies. And number two, I think they should completely eliminate subsidized loans in the next 3 years. Put that money to work on loans, but with a 1 or 2 point profit, and put that back into the loan program to take care of so many of these delinquencies and repossessions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. If there's someone else that wished to make a statement, and yes, okay, go ahead, and then we'll call it a day.
I'm going to make it quick. My name is Veronica Slager, and I just wanted to comment on some of the comments that Representative Martin had said. Kind of surprised at myself saying this because I was born and raised in Alaska, and when the dividend was first being created, or the whole program, I kind of don't know. But anyway, I had mixed feelings about it, and I still have mixed feelings about it. But to get to the point, I wanted to say that there are a lot of people that are collecting dividends that have intention, or maybe not even when they filed, they didn't intend to leave, but they have to leave now. And it's too bad, but we can't penalize them. I mean, they were here during that time that was specified, and even if they were active participants in our state. And I also disagree with the gentleman prior to me. You know, of course, aliens, I don't care who they are. If they're active in our state, I think that they have contributed, and I think they deserve it just as much as any of us. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Veronica. Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, one and all, for coming today. We are adjourned for the second time. Okay, have a piece of candy. How's your summer been? Did you have a good one?
Yes.
You've been spending time with your business.
Yes.
The hunger came down to leave.
I'll spend time with the business.
Boy, I need the business. I've got a book.
You've
got
to make a living. Yeah, that's right. You've got to make a living.
It's going to be a long stretch from January to May.
Boy, I know. I know.
Yeah.